I do that for a couple reasons. The main reason being it kind of gets you engaged and hopefully gets your attention and paying attention and thinking about the things that we're going to talk about. And so I want to do that tonight. I want to start with a question. And that question is, how do I look? Don't answer that, Robin. I asked that question. I made sure I wore one of my best suits tonight before I asked that question. Because we have a saying, don't we? Clothes make the man. And right or wrong, good or bad, we judge people by their clothes, don't we? You remember in James chapter 2, you won't have to turn over there, but you remember in James chapter 2, the Christians there were encouraged and commanded to treat everybody the same, rich or poor. And you remember in that lesson how they were deemed to be rich or poor. They were judged based upon the clothes that they wore into the assembly. So clothes are important. And we might be surprised how much the Bible has to say about clothes. We can talk a lot of ways about clothes. You judge kind of what era you're in by the clothes. I could have asked for a homework assignment tonight to everybody to bring a photograph of yourself when you were 16. And we could have put a slideshow up here and we'd have been able to tell what decade you grew up in. If you grew up in the 50s, we'd be able to tell, couldn't we, based upon just the clothes that you wore. If you grew up in the 80s, we'd say, based upon the clothes that you wear. And the Bible has a lot to say about clothes. Adam and Eve were introduced to their clothing very early on and how God changed the clothing that they first began to wear. Moses was told to take his shoes off when he approached that holy burning bush. And I want to talk to you tonight about an interesting character. And a character that we know a lot about his clothes. And that's Joseph. So would you turn with me in the book of Genesis? Genesis chapter 37 through 50 tells the story of Joseph. And I don't want to read, that'll be a lengthy reading, Genesis 37 through 50. So let's do the Reader's Digest version of the story of his life. And then I want to note for you that three times in the story of Joseph, we're told about his clothes. And every garment has a lesson attached with it. And we're going to use Joseph's clothes as the point for our lesson this evening, as we continue this series that we've simply entitled Interesting Characters. And Joseph is one of those. The story of Joseph, really to set the context, you have to back up a couple generations, don't you, to Abraham. Abraham had been promised that he would be given a grand family, not just a family, but a nation would come out of him. And a nation that would be the vehicle through whom God would bless not only his people, but all peoples. Abraham had a son named Isaac. Isaac had a son named Jacob, whose name would later be changed to Israel. It would become that nation. That Jacob, that Israel, had several sons. One that he named Joseph. And you know the story well. He had 12 sons, but one was his favorite. Favored maybe because he was the firstborn of his true love. Not the firstborn child by any stretch of the imagination, but he was the firstborn child of his true love. And so he favored Joseph. And you remember famously the first garment we're going to be introduced to of Joseph is because of Joseph's favored status in his father's eyes. He was given that prized possession, and everybody could answer the question, couldn't they? The coat of many colors. And so in this well-to-do family, Joseph is the favored son. And you might think that's a good thing. It's good to be dad's favorite. But it carries with it some burden. Because usually when you're the favored child, so pointedly, your siblings aren't usually going to like that. In fact, most parenting books today would not advise you to pick out one of your children and make them your favorite and give them better clothes than the other kids. But that's what Jacob did. His brothers didn't like that. And things got worse when Joseph told them about a dream that he had. I had a dream that all of y'all are going to bow down to me. That helped things. And so his brothers conspired to kill him. And that wasn't just some exaggerated statement made in anger. They meant it. They were going to kill their brother, Joseph. Two of the brothers, Judah and Reuben, kind of conspired together to not do that and instead just throw him in a pit. And then he was sold into slavery. But in that slavery, he rose to power in Potiphar's household. Potiphar was the captain of the guard at that time. And he rose to power in Potiphar's household, and he caught the eye of Mrs. Potiphar. And she tried to entice him to lie with her and was persistent in that. And one day, she got him alone in the house, and he just got away by having to leave his coat behind. That's the second garment we read about of Joseph. And because his garment had been left behind in the hands of Mrs. Potiphar, she concocts a lie and tells just the opposite of what had happened in that scenario and accuses Joseph of being the instigator, and Joseph is thrown into prison. Joseph meets some people in prison and interprets some dreams. Just like we could use Joseph's garments to track his life and his up and down, we could track his life by dreams, couldn't we? Dreams again come into play, but now dreams of someone else, and he interprets those dreams, and kind of a slow process, but because of that, he ends up getting released from prison and rises even higher in the government in Egypt. Not just the ruler of Potiphar's household, who was a powerful person in Egypt, but he becomes the second in command, basically ruling all over Egypt. And the text is going to tell us that he was clothed in royal garments in that position. And because of that position and the famine and the dream that got him in that position about that famine, his family ends up making their way to Egypt. This is going to be the birth, the beginnings of that Egyptian captivity of the children of Israel. This is all a part of God's plan to make them this great nation. And slowly through a series of events, Joseph is revealed to his brothers and even to his father, who thought he had died years ago. That's the story of Joseph. And again, three times in this story, we're told about the garments of Joseph. And those garments teach us a lesson. So let's talk about those three sets of clothes. First of all, we see him in that coat of many colors, which again was a tangible, visible indication of his level, his status in this well-known, well-to-do family, that he was the favored son. He was on top of the world. But one lesson that we learn from this coat of many colors is that our fortunes can change, and how quickly they change. From being dad's favorite
to now escaping death by the skin of your teeth and being cast into slavery. How quickly things can change. And you know, life's that way. And we need to be prepared for the changes in life. That in a moment, things can be going great for us. We can be on top of the world. Everything seems to be going our way. And then tragedy can fall. Everything can fall apart in our lives. Jesus warned his followers that rejoicing last but for a moment. Sorrow comes in the morning. And we need to be humble. We need to be humble about our circumstances in life and about our ability to be able to deal with that change and sometimes tragic change. Joseph's life is an illustration of that, isn't it? Think about the ups and downs. Joseph goes again from being the favored son in a well-to-do family to a slave in a foreign land. He goes from being a slave to being a ruler in a very powerful politician's household, Potiphar's. And he goes from that high, lofty position to now being a prisoner. And he goes from being a prisoner to being virtually the ruler of the most powerful kingdom on earth at that time, the Egyptian Empire. Things can change. And we need to be humble in our ability to be able to accept that. We don't know. Look with me. You know this passage. You might put a finger there in Genesis and go to the book of James. You might could have guessed that this is where we're going. James warns about this concept, this humility that we ought to have. James chapter 4. And in verse 13, when he says, "Come now, you who say today or tomorrow we'll go to such and such a city and spend a year there, buy and sell and make a profit, whereas you do not know what will happen tomorrow. For what is your life? It's even a vapor that appears for a little time and then vanishes away. Instead, you ought to say, if the Lord wills, we shall live and do this or that. But now you boast in your arrogance. All such boasting is evil." James says, you better be humble. Don't boast in your arrogance that you know what's happening. You know what's going to come tomorrow. Now, we understand what James is not condemning. James is not saying it's wrong to make plans. James is not saying just live every day for itself. James is not condemning having a calendar and planning some things and preparing for the future. What James is condemning is two things. Number one is making those plans in arrogance. Boasting about those things. I'm in control of my life. I get to decide what happens tomorrow. And the second thing that he's condemning is not including God in those plans. If the Lord wills, we will do that. Be prepared mentally and spiritually for the changes, sometimes drastic, sometimes devastating changes in your life. And what the child of God must do is anchor themselves to God so that when those changes happen in life, we're still anchored to God. If we anchor ourselves and our happiness to the circumstances of life, then our life and our emotions and our spirituality is going to be that roller coaster. And so first of all, we need to be humble about those things. You don't know what's going to happen. You don't know how you're going to deal with those things. The second lesson from the coat of many colors is that life isn't fair. What happened to Joseph in the two deep valleys of his life wasn't fair. Now again, there may be some blame to spread around. It probably wasn't wise of Father Jacob to single him out among his 12 brothers. I had 2 brothers. I barely survived that. Can't imagine having 11 and Dad setting you up on the pedestal as being the favorite and giving you... And so Jacob maybe shares some of the blame in this story. And you could, now we have to be very careful here, maybe Joseph shares a sliver of the blame. Maybe in telling his family about the dreams, he may have been a little boastful about, you're going to bow down to me and what does this mean? That's questionable, I admit, but maybe. But even allowing for the mistakes of Father Jacob and even assuming that Joseph was maybe a little boastful in telling his brothers that they were going to bow down to him at some point, he didn't deserve to be killed. And that's what the original plan was. He didn't deserve to be thrown into a hole and sold into slavery. Nobody deserves that. And so life just isn't fair, is it? Look with me in the Old Testament now. In the book of Ecclesiastes, the wise man made this observation. And it's an observation, if we're honest and if we're paying attention, we could have made ourselves. Look in Ecclesiastes chapter 9. In Ecclesiastes chapter 9, look at verses 11 and 12. The wise man says, Ecclesiastes 9, verses 11 and 12, I returned and I saw under the sun that the race is not to the swift, nor the battle to the strong, nor bread to the wise, nor riches to men of understanding, nor favor to men of skill, but time and chance happens to them all. For a man also does not know his time, like fish taken in a cruel net, like birds caught in a snare. So the sons of men are snared in an evil time when it suddenly falls upon them. The wise man says, the fastest guy doesn't always win the race. That's just not fair. The smartest and even most godly person doesn't always get ahead in this life like they ought to. And that's just not fair. And sometimes horrible things happen to good people. And that's just not fair. And so what's the lesson from that? That is the lesson. Life ain't fair. And those of us with an eternal perspective need to just accept that. To understand it and accept it. That's the way this life is going to be. Don't frustrate yourself, and most importantly, don't let it become a spiritual detriment and spiritual discouragement that might risk your faith in realizing that life just isn't fair. One of the great things that commends Joseph and the story of Joseph to us is that he dealt with those things. With the unfairness that seemed to plague his life. And so we see Joseph in this coat of many colors. And then the next garment is the garment that's left with Potiphar's wife. You remember, he goes from the high of being the favored son in this well-to-do family to the low of being a slave in a foreign land to now he rises to power in Potiphar's household. And again, you remember the story of Potiphar's wife enticing him. I want to be delicate with this part of the story. But we know a couple things about Joseph. We know that he was a man. We know that he was a relatively young man. And all all of the feelings and emotions and wants that come with that. And the text actually also tells us something else about Joseph, that he was a good-looking young man. In fact, it describes him that his physique and his facial features were good. And like the being the favored son, you might think that's a great thing. But that also carries with it a burden. Trust me, I know. Now, we don't know what Potiphar's wife looked like. But we know that this was a young man, a long way from his father's house. And here is this woman on multiple occasions enticing him to engage in illicit sexual activity. And over again, Joseph says no. No. And at least once he states the reason. And he doesn't say, I'm not attracted to you, you're not my type. He says, how can I do this to my master? Speaking of his boss, Potiphar. He resists that, let's be honest, what would have been a temptation. And the lessons from this garment is that temptation is real. And it's dangerous. One of the many things that impresses us about Joseph in this story is his lack of naivete. He knew the danger. There were two levels of danger in Joseph in this story. If he had given in and Potiphar found out, he wouldn't have gone to jail. Wherever he went, he would have went without his head. But he also understood the spiritual danger involved in this temptation. So what impresses us is his lack of naivete. He knew what was going on. He knew the danger. He knew what was wrong about this. And sometimes what endangers us as Christians the most is our naivete. That we think somehow we're isolated and insulated to temptation, that it won't bother us. Oh, I could be with someone of the opposite sex. I could get close to them and share some intimate personal information with this person. I can be alone with them and not succumb to temptation. We're being naive. It won't affect me. And we would never verbalize this, but I truly think we sometimes feel this way, that even if I give in to the temptation and I sin, somehow that won't affect me. You know, the human psyche, the human mind, has an amazing ability to ignore something. Several years ago, to help support the work of preaching, I got into real estate. And sometimes when you get into real estate, you get into situations where people are selling a house because of financial difficulties. It isn't because of good news. They're moving to be closer to the grandchildren, or moving because they got a promotion. Sometimes they're trying to sell their house because the finances are falling apart. And I can't tell you the number of times that I've sat at somebody's house and they just tell me, yeah, we just decided to sell. And you do a little research and come to find out that they're about 2 weeks away from foreclosure. They never said that. You go back to them, I didn't know anything about that. Well, yeah, you kind of had to. You knew you hadn't been making payments for months. You've been getting letters and phone calls, but somehow they had just blocked that out and ignored all of that and were oblivious instead of it. And sometimes I would tell them, if you would have come to me a couple months ago, I could have helped you, but now it's too late.
But they put it off and put it off because they somehow, the human mind has the great capacity to just ignore what's sometimes so obvious in front of us. And we as Christians can do that with temptation and sin, somehow thinking that it won't affect me. I won't be tempted to sin like every other human being that's ever lived. But even if I do, somehow that won't affect my relationship with God. And we're just dead wrong. The New Testament, Peter puts it in such graphic terms that Satan is like a roaring lion seeking whom he may devour. Intentionally trying to shock you and scare you into the reality of what sin and temptation is all about. The other lesson from this garment left with Potiphar's wife is that our integrity must be guarded at all costs. Joseph did that. Though it would cost him again, that he would again be thrown into a pit and become not a slave this time, but a prisoner. But he did so with his integrity intact. There's a passage in the New Testament that we're very familiar with. Look in Ephesians chapter 6. The passage where the Apostle Paul is talking about putting on the whole armor of God. And I think sometimes we get so enamored with each individual item of that armor that we forget the main point, which is simply saying, wrap yourself in God. This is the armor in the book of Isaiah. This is the armor that God wears. So you just wrap yourself in God. You let God be your warrior. You go into battle with God, like David. David, and we talk about the story of, we could have had him as one of our interesting characters. Let's make this a two-week meeting and we'll get him in the list there. But David and Goliath, and sometimes we watch a basketball game, especially March Madness, and the little bitty school you had to Google to find out what state they're in is playing the perennial powerhouse. And the announcers will say, this is a David and Goliath story, which they mean by that the little guy can sneak up and beat the big guy. If you think that's the story of David and Goliath, you're wrong. David loses 100 times out of 100 fighting Goliath, if it's just man on man. He won because God was with him on the battlefield. And that's the point of Ephesians chapter 6. You take God, God's your warrior, God's your armor. Remember, David rejected the armor of Saul, but he had armor because he went with God on that battlefield. And so he tells us to wrap ourselves, make God our armor, our warrior. But then look at the last verse of this armor of God. He says, therefore, Ephesians 6, verse 13, therefore take up the whole armor of God that you may be able to withstand in the evil day. I take that to be the day of battle, the day of temptation, that you might be able to withstand in the evil day, and having done all, to stand. Joseph and the garment he leaves behind in the hands of Potiphar's wife tells us that we must do that. Having done all, you do whatever it takes to have your integrity intact. That might mean severing relationships with people. It might mean quitting a job. Whatever it takes, you do whatever you can to withstand in that evil day. That's a lesson of Joseph. The last piece of clothing that we read about is found in Genesis chapter 41. Would you turn over there with me? He's in that prison. He interprets some dreams, and finally, it's a slow process, but finally that gets to Pharaoh's ears when he has a dream. And Joseph is able to interpret that dream, and that causes this great rise to power. When again, Joseph finds himself on top. And look in Genesis chapter 41 and verse 42.
In verse 41, he says, "See, I have set you over all the land of Egypt." Then Pharaoh took his signet ring off his hand and put it on Joseph's hand, and he clothed him in garments of fine linen and put a gold chain around his neck. Historical evidence is pretty scant on what an ancient, very ancient Egyptian prison would have been like and what clothes those prisoners would have worn. But we can assume it wasn't this. What a change in attire from the clothes of a prisoner to now he's wearing the king's signet ring. That was more than just a piece of jewelry. That wasn't an accessory. That gave him the signature of the king. The authority, the power. He's given these fine garments and a gold chain, something befitting a person of his position and his authority and power. So he goes from a coat of many colors to the garment he leaves in Mrs. Potiphar's hand to now the royal robes of one of the most powerful men in all the world. And the lesson Joseph tells us that teaches us is that God can mean it for good. Now what he tells his brothers in chapter 50 and in verse 20, when he says, you meant it for bad. Those years ago when you threw me in that pit, 10 of you or 9 of you wanted to kill me. But you threw me in that pit and you sold me into slavery. You meant it for harm. But God meant it for good. We talked about life isn't fair. And life teaches us that every day, doesn't it? But if you're careful and if you're paying attention, if you're spiritually minded and focused, life will also teach you this. God can use it for good. Isn't that the lesson Mordecai tried to teach Esther? When she was in that position, he's trying to pressure her to go to the king to help the Jewish nation. And he says, you know, this might be the whole reason you're here. Maybe God puts you here just for this moment. We can't always see it. We often can't see it for sure. But the providence of God is alive and working today. And God can use even the worst of circumstances to put us in a position to make us spiritually stronger and to put us in a position to help someone else and be a blessing to ourselves and a blessing to someone else's life. And so be aware of those things. Look for those God moments in your life where God may be using what looks like horrible things, bad, negative things, to put you in a position, as Esther and as Joseph, to fulfill good and wonderful things. And the last lesson that we learn from these royal garments is that our story isn't over till it's over. Joseph, being sold into slavery, taken away from his family and his homeland, could have just laid in a ditch and died. Thrown into prison, unfairly. Could have just given up, and as Job's wife encouraged him to do, just curse God and die. But he didn't. His story wasn't over when he was in the pit. His story wasn't over when he was a slave in a foreign land. His story wasn't over when he was a prisoner. And you're still in Genesis, look in chapter 50. His story wasn't even over when he died. In Genesis chapter 50, and in verse 24, it says, "Then Joseph said to his brethren, I am dying. But God will surely visit you and bring you out of this land to the land of which he swore to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob. Then Joseph took an oath from the children of Israel, saying, God will surely visit you, and you shall carry up my bones from here. And so Joseph died, being 110 years old, and they embalmed him, and he was put in a coffin in Egypt." We could have added a fourth garment, couldn't we? Those burial clothes. that he wore. And Joseph said, the story's not even over. You're going to leave here. You're going somewhere else. Take me with you, even if it's just my bones. You may be going through a difficult time. You may be in the pit or a prisoner. But the story's not over till God says it's over. Don't become so discouraged and so despondent that you give up in your darkest moments. Be a Joseph. And remember that God can mean it for good. And in those dark moments, don't use that as an excuse to lose your integrity, to give in to temptation and sin. Remember that it's not over until it's over. Would you give your life to Christ tonight? Would you be a Joseph? Would you be one of those interesting biblical characters that we've talked about and we'll talk about the rest of this week? Will you let God use you and work in your life to prosper you spiritually and let you be in a position, whether it's on your worst day or your best day, but to put you in a position to be a blessing to others? Would you come to Him? Would you come to Him back in obedience to the gospel? Right now, as together we stand and as we sing.